Welcome to the Mental Health Today Show. My name is John Cordray, and I'm a licensed therapist, and I've been doing this show since 2015. My guest today is Dr. Robert Smith. He's a nationally recognized leader in evidence-based mental health care and doctor-patient communication. He's a university distinguished professor of medicine and psychiatry at the Michigan State University, and he developed the first patient-centered method to train medical professionals to build strong partnerships with their patients. Dr. Smith, welcome to the show.
John, good to see you. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. I've been really looking forward to our time together because it really caught my attention. You are a doctor, and I would imagine you've been doing this for a little while. And your passion right now is to train and teach other medical professionals about how to be thinking about patient mental health care, because that's so huge right now, just the mental health. And it's not just looking at the symptoms, but we want to look at the heart and mind as well. I want to hear a little bit more about you and your story. Do you have a story that you can share?
Sure. I mean, this is the story of how I got into this. I trained, like most doctors, in a tertiary institution where we learned all about physical diseases. I knew all about rare diseases and all of the usual medical things that doctors learn about physical diseases. And then went into practice. I was feeling pretty cocky and self-satisfied. You know, I knew it pretty well, passed all my boards and stuff. The wake-up call came in practice because many patients, John, that I saw there, I had never seen before in this tertiary institution where I trained. They had mental health problems. They had psychological problems. They were stressed. They were emotional. And I didn't have a clue what to do with this. And it made me uncomfortable. And it all made me feel bad about the patients, not just myself. And one in particular that really transformed my life, April was her name. She came in, she was 40 years old, had metastatic breast cancer. It had spread into her spine and was just having terrible, terrible pain with it. Now, this is a long time ago. And so at that point, she'd had all the treatment, all the surgery and chemotherapy and stuff. There really was no medical treatment left for her, unfortunately. And so I would see her. I was 30. I'd just gone into practice. And she'd come in and she'd say, "Why am I crying all the time? Why am I so sad? What are we going to do about this? How can you help me? What's going on?" And I almost froze it. I didn't know what to do. And we'd been taught, don't get too involved with patients. It'll make you too subjective. It'll ruin your objectivity. And we'd also taught that patients don't want to talk about emotional things. Just stick to medicine. Well, it didn't feel right. But in any event, all I would do, I didn't know any better, would order tests. I'd get an x-ray. I knew it wasn't going to do any good for her, but it bought me time, John. And it was really a frustrating period. And she wanted to be seen almost once a week for problems and just getting worse. I'm sure she was depressed, but I had no clue how to treat depression. We weren't taught that. And long story short, she died after about 3-4 months after I'd seen her. And I liked her, but quite frankly, I was relieved when she died. I almost breathed a sigh of relief that I would no longer have to deal with this. That was until about 2 weeks later. Her husband came into my office rather hurriedly and anxiously and said, "I think you might like to see this. It's her diary." And he scooted out of the room right away. He wasn't in there 10 seconds. And I thought that was kind of odd. So I opened the book, and it was just replete with things like, "The poor young doctor doesn't know what to do with me. I don't think the young doctor cares. All he does is order a lab test. I wish he'd try to help me." And it was just, that was just on the first page, John. And I, with a knot in my stomach, and was really almost disoriented after reading that and reading more pages. And that lasted. I mean, I had trouble seeing patients the rest of the day. It just kept coming back to me how what an awful job I had done. And, you know, I'd really failed her in her moments of suffering, many moments. And it was with that that I kind of internally started to change. I had realized some of this even when I was in training. We had patients there that I felt like we needed to address their psychological and emotional stuff, but nobody did it, and so I didn't. But here, in any event, I started paying more attention, trying to listen better, and so on. People actually liked it. They'd compliment, say, gosh, it's nice to have a doctor listen to me. But long story short, again, this lasted. Now I'm working on myself over some, you know, probably 7 or 8 years. And I got better and started feeling better with patients. I was more comfortable. I liked talking to them. And I got as much out of it, I think, as they did. But so I was able to establish nice relationships. But I still didn't know anything about mental health. There were all kinds of people with depression, alcoholism, panic attacks showing up in the emergency room. And it was just, I knew I wasn't meeting many of my patients' needs. And so at that point, I decided to leave practice and I went back to the University of Rochester. This is in upstate New York. And trained in so-called biopsychosocial medicine. I did inpatient psychiatry, psychotherapy, all sorts of things, so that I became competent in mental health care. And following that, I devoted my career to training doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, physician assistants in mental health care so that they never had to go through what I, and especially my patients, had to go through for a lack of training in mental health care. And that's just kind of long story short. It's in detail, and has medicine lost its mind? I go through this and many other unhappy interactions that I had.
I think that's fantastic. And what you just referenced is one of your books that you have out.
Yeah.
And I think the story that you shared was just tremendous. It had me hooked. And, you know, just it brings to my mind my own doctor's appointments. And, you know, doctors have lots of patients that they see every day. They have a certain amount of time, and they might ask maybe a question of, are you depressed?
Yeah.
It's usually yes or no. And then it's gone, right? It's not really talked about. And I would imagine if someone said, yes, I'm depressed, that maybe that there might be a referral, perhaps. But that's probably about it, because there's a certain amount of time. And I think you bring such a great, fresh perspective to the doctors. And there's kind of the old school and kind of the new school. And we want to try to really bring out the fact that mental health and health care are the same. They're not separate.
Not
that doctors have to be a therapist, but to have some knowledge, like you were mentioning. And I think that is just a really eye-opener, that diary that you
have. I mean, the sad thing, and when I was in practice, I talked to other doctors about this. And so they all had the same problems. And they were all equally. Doctors, by and large, are decent, good people. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bad press for not listening, not attending to emotions and psychological stuff and so on. The problem is, John, they didn't train us for this. All they trained us in was physical diseases, diabetes and cancer and the like, and that's all important. But they didn't train us in the human being that has the disease. A prime example of this is that medical school training in mental health and other psychological and social problems, such as prevention, is no more than 2% of total training time. This is across 4 years of medical school, another 3 to 5 years of residency. So that's 7+ years of training where you hear nothing but physical disease. And in fact, it gets worse even. There's, as I say, a smattering of psychiatry that one gets, but most of that is unsupervised. They'll do a lecture on suicide or a lecture on depression or a lecture on opioids, but there's no supervised training in it. Quite in contrast, all the supervised training I received with people with heart failure and heart attacks and strokes and cancer. And so there's that vast difference in the way we treat mental and psychological and social issues and the way we're trained for physical issues. But the sad commentary is how little training there is in this. And I I'm almost embarrassed for medicine to say this, but mental health problems are the most common health condition in the U.S. They're more common than heart disease and cancer combined. And yet, can you imagine this? Medicine is not training its graduates to care for the most common condition they face in practice. Has medicine lost its mind? That's where the title of the book comes from.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, no, I think that that's such a good point that patients, when they go to their doctor, they know that their doctor is not a psychiatrist or not a therapist. But when they are struggling with mental health, whether it's depression, anxiety, bipolar, whatever mental health struggle that they're dealing with, that's just as much a part of them as is whatever physical ailment that they're having.
That's right.
And sometimes they're connected. That's you mentioned right. A lot of people go to the ER because they think they're having a heart attack, but it's really a panic attack.
Panic attack.
And that happens so often. Yeah. I think if doctors, if you're listening to this and you're a doctor and you're thinking about your own patients, awesome. So if doctors will just think about, they don't have to memorize the whole DSM diagnostic manual, but just recognize and show some empathy to their patients, that can go a long way.
Exactly. I mean, of all psychotherapy, you know this better than I do. You're a therapist. But from my work on patient-centered interviewing and doctor-patient relationships, we know that no particular form of psychotherapy is as important as the relationship the therapist establishes with the patient, whatever the type of therapy. And so if doctors can simply learn to be empathic with patients, even though they've got a mental health problem, that is going a long way toward helping them. And most doctors are not trained to recognize or to treat mental disorders. Many have worked very hard on their own and gone to conferences and so on and have picked up some significant skills, but they're still in the minority. I mean, the downside of this, John, is just tremendous. There were 200,000, over 200,000 opioid overdoses from doctor-prescribed opioids. Doctors aren't trained in opioids or in chronic pain, which is why opioids are given. I mean, there are something like 48,000 suicides a year. Nearly half of these patients see their primary care doctor in the 2 to 4 weeks before they commit suicide. But doctors aren't trained to recognize even recognize suicide, much less know what to do with it. And again, this sounds critical of medicine, and I'm one of them, and I feel bad already about saying it, but it's not their fault. Mm-hmm. The fault is the whole system of medicine and medical education that is interested almost exclusively in physical diseases. Mm-hmm. They give psychology and psychological and emotional things some lip service, and it has gotten better. In fairness to medicine, it has gotten better. Most schools now do train their students in so-called patient-centered interviewing and doctor-patient relationships. The problem is it's usually in the first year of medical school, and they go through 7 more years of training and never hear about it again. And there's also, I'm somewhat reluctant to talk about this, but it's important to the topic. It's not just that medicine focuses on physical diseases. There is a culture of medicine that dismisses psychiatry and psychological issues. You'll often hear professors say, oh, don't talk to a patient about that touchy-feely stuff. They don't want to do that. What are you going to do, go into psychiatry? Well, they're across the street. And they almost always are literally across the street. And so they're all, that divide is just constantly, is constantly there. And I mean, a prime example of this negative culture toward psychiatry is that this had come out, I think it was in the British Journal of Psychiatry study, nice study. 49% of entering medical students are highly interested in psychiatry and psychology and emotional issues. By the time they graduate 4 years later, it's down to 4%. So medical school is doing something to them during that time to discourage this. One, of course, is that they don't get any training in it, and they get 98% of their training is on physical disease problems. But another is this negative culture towards psychological things.
You know, that's a shame. And I agree with you. I've noticed that too throughout my years in therapy and doing therapy. But it's a shame that there is it's almost like a wall that divides the healthcare versus the mental health side. And that's unfortunate, but you're wanting to bridge those two. And I know you do a lot of teaching in the university. I know you do a lot of lectures and papers. You got these books. I'm really interested in learning a little bit more about the book that you wrote. You mentioned it a couple of times. Can you tell us a little bit more about the book?
Sure. I didn't talk about this, but after I did my training, I've been at Michigan State then since 1985. And we developed, I got very interested in research. It wasn't just how to teach this, but it's how to make it evidence-based. And we did, in a couple of randomized controlled trials, develop what is still the only patient-centered interviewing method. In other words, you can teach doctors how to be patient-centered and how to be empathic. And part and parcel of that is how to develop the attitudes that you want to be empathic. And it's highly effective. And we then, in a couple other randomized controlled trials, developed the only primary care mental health model for training doctors. With psychiatry and psychology on the outside looking in, we can't just come in and say, here's how I think we ought to do it, here's how I like to do it, and here's somebody else who say, well, here's how I like to do it. We need rather systematic methods, which is what we develop, and then showing by randomized controlled trials that they work. That's what gets psychology from the outside to the inside, because that's the coin of the realm in physical disease medicine, randomized controlled trials, evidence-based approaches. Okay, we did all that, and we now have all these things. And while there has been some progress, it is, relatively speaking, minuscule. Psychiatry still, or medicine still teaches psychiatry no more than 2% of total teaching time across 7 or more years. As I said, they do teach some patient-centered interviewing, but it's only a tiny bit in the first year. And so I became discouraged about our lack of progress, particularly after presenting all this evidence that works. And believe me, I'm not the only one in medicine talking like this. People have been warning medicine since the 1970s that they needed to include the psychological, social, psychiatric, whatever term you want to put into it. They need to include it in a meaningful way in teaching, which means much more than they do now across all years of medical school and all years of residency. But they don't do it. And I became discouraged that wasn't happening. It's really outside of the interviewing training that they now do. It's no different than when I got into this in 1985. So I decided, I was sitting here once, I had a grant that would have gotten funded. They had told us that we just needed to resubmit it and do a few things. And I was sitting there and thinking, do I want to go through this again and write all of this stuff, take all this time? And I thought to myself, well, what's the worst thing that could happen? The worst thing that happened is I got the grant. I'd have to do it. And it still wouldn't go anywhere. And it was kind of at that point that I decided to, as it were, go public. The public needs to be informed of what you and I are talking about, John, that their mental health, I think most people in the public assume they go to the doctor and their mental health care is just as good as their physical disease care. It's not. And I don't think people understand that. And it's with that in mind that I wrote, Has Medicine Lost Its Mind? To appeal to the public, but also to appeal to medicine. I mean, it's applicable to medical people. And many in the public and in medicine have read it and now give me feedback that it really is raising an important point. and one that hasn't been raised. Medicine is fairly insular. It kind of runs itself and does its own thing, and without much external input. It's hard to break out of that, but that's what I'm trying to do. And so that's the origin of the book.
Well, I think that's a humongous goal and mission and passion, and that's so needed. And if you had a magic wand and you can wave this wand over the institutions of schooling for training up doctors, what would you change? What would you encourage? Like, let's say, for instance, the decision makers are of these universities and of the programs, and they were listening, and they were like, all right, tell us what you want us, what should we do? How should we train our physicians? Yeah. What would you say?
Sure. I addressed that in Has Medicine Lost Its Mind? It used to be in the main text, but it's kind of detailed and so on. And so I put it into the appendices. But in essence, what needs to happen, there are so few psychiatrists now that there are not enough to conduct increased training. So the first thing that needs to happen is a massive program training existing primary care faculty. And I don't mean a lecture or two over the weekend. I mean training them over 18 to 24 months with on-site supervision and so on. And I outline in the book how to do that. Once they are trained, and we don't want everybody to become psychiatrists, and we don't want these faculty to become psychiatrists, but we want them to become as skilled in mental health as they are in physical health care. And this is what we want our student graduates to become, as skilled in mental health care as in physical health care. And so once this happens, you would have now a cadre of 40 or 50 fully trained primary care faculty in every medical school in the country. They would now start conducting training. It won't be at 2% anymore. It will eventually be up to 30% of total training time. And it is not only in the first year, it's in all 4 years of medical school and 3 to 5 years of residency. And they're not going to be taught side by side. They're going to be integrated.
Love it.
These skilled in mental health faculty will be the same people who train them in physical disease, and they will know how to integrate. They will know, for example, that a diabetic with heart failure that can't get around anymore, can't go to church, can't go out and see her friends, people with severe disabilities often become depressed. They will know that. Doctors now don't know that, and they don't recognize it or treat it. This will be treated now. And so that is the first step of what needs to happen. The second step is to train more psychiatrists. The third step is to bring psychology and related therapist disciplines into medicine. They now exist outside of medicine. I assume you're in psychology.
Yeah, no, I'm a licensed professional counselor. Yeah, I'm a
professional
therapist. But yeah.
You all are outside of medicine.
Yeah,
medicine
right.
Has not owned you and quite frankly has often been reluctant to be involved, as you've found out. We need to bring all these people together. You, people in psychology and related mental health disciplines, psychiatry, and these trained medical people will now do all the training. I would guess 4 to 5 years, you could have some beginning results from this. It would take about 2 years to train all the medical faculty. And it takes a while for that to take effect. People go through medical school for 4 years before you see an effect of it. But I would guess you could see that within 5 years. Within 10 years, you'd have most people graduating that are as skilled in mental health as in physical health. And by 20 years, the problem would be solved. Now, if we had done this, that sounds like a long time, and there's no quick fix. People are finding that out, tinkering at the margins out there, altering doctors' pay schedules and giving them more time to see patients and so on. has not worked. Mental health care is no better now than it was 20 years ago. And so what we're doing now isn't working. It's going to take a major inroad like this. If we had done this when first warned in 1970, we'd had no mental health problem of the day. They would be fully integrated. And that, I think, is what we need to look toward. In the long run is what's called integrated care or collaborative care, where there are teams of, there's be a trained primary care doctor. She or he will take care of, I'm guessing, 50, 60% of all mental health problems themselves. The others will be referred to a psychiatrist, psychologist, psychiatric social worker, whatever the psychological training within the group, and they will work in a group, not on separate sides of the street, but in the same clinic. And this is the ideal in the long run, and it's the way medicine should be practiced. I'll take this another step if you want.
Yes, please.
I don't think medicine's going to do this. This is why I'm going to the public. Unfortunately, medicine just has showed no interest in doing this in a meaningful way. And what needs to happen is a federal level, analogous to the Federal Reserve that runs banking, there should be some sort of, I call it a National Institute for Health Education. Don Berwick calls it the National Health Responsibility Board. But it will have total control over all medical care, including the first step it will do would be medical education, doing just what I've been talking about. It will also oversee all other care to be sure that care is integrated, that patient care is primary, not secondary to cost issues, and research will be equally based. Right now, even though mental health is the most common health condition there is, National Institutes of Health funding is less than 10% for the institutes doing mental health care. And just that's just another example. I mean, of course, they're doing some with mental health care. It's National Institute of Mental Health is a fantastic place and does great work, but it's underfunded relative to the importance of mental health in the country. And it, I mean, this is a problem that is going to have to move to the federal level. Hannah Arendt, a famous historian, philosopher, raised a question that makes people that should make people think. And the question is, who governs the direction of any science? The science itself or the public? Well, we've weighed in on this with test tube babies. There aren't going to be test tube babies. The public weighed in. The public is weighing in now. There's not going to be robots telling us what to do. But in medicine, it is so insular, the public has not weighed in at all. And the public now needs to become involved. Medicine, I mean, given what we're talking about, is a case in point of why public oversight needs to happen. Medicine is off the rails right now as far as mental health care goes. It is a crisis that is worsening by the day in our most common patients. And medicine is in effect doing nothing right now. And again, many people in medicine, I'm not the only one saying this, I would guess half the people in medicine understand this, but it has been so insular that they have trouble getting out of it. It's only the public is going to be able to resolve this.
Well, I think that's phenomenal that you're bringing this attention to the masses and to the public. And I'm assuming that's one of the main reasons why you wrote your book.
That's the reason, yeah.
Yeah. And so if someone's listening to this and they're wanting to learn more, maybe check out your book, how would they find that? Where is your book located?
I've got a website. It's you know, robertcsmithmd.com. And in fact, two things. Click on that. The first thing that comes up is Has Medicine Lost Its Mind? And it shows you how to buy it through Books A Million or Amazon or Barnes & Noble and so on. But if you click down a notch, there's a thing that says Act Now. Open that up and you will find the email addresses of the president, the Surgeon General, National Academy of Medicine, your senators, and your House of Representative person. You've now opened 5 emails. Down below is a sample letter. Plug it into the email and send it. It advises what needs to happen immediately. And so that is a way everybody right now can have some input. And specifically, what is recommending, we haven't talked about it yet, but what is the vehicle for getting the public involved? And it is to conduct an independent review nationally, people, prominent independent people, conduct a review of medical education. It's that simple. And they are going to look to see how effectively medicine is caring for its patients. Number two, and we haven't talked about this, is how scientific modern medicine is functioning. They will find, as we've discussed already, that medicine is not providing good care of its most common health population. They will also find that medicine is functioning in a non-scientific way. Here's how. All sciences at the start of the last century were equally reductionistic as medicine, just focusing on one part of their problem. Medicine just focuses on the physical disease and excludes the personal and the psychological and the social. All sciences did that. That's the way a science gets started. Medicine and other sciences were new, coming out of the scientific revolution. And so they focused, just an isolated focus. But all sciences, starting with physics, began recognizing that there was more to their science than just that isolated focus on one part of it. And they all developed a so-called systems perspective, which means you address all parts of the problem and their interactions, not just one part as medicine does. And so in that sense, medicine today is the only science that continues to adhere to a reductionistic, unidimensional focus, excluding the other parts of its science, the psychological and the social. And so in that sense, medicine is non-scientific. Okay, this independent committee will now report out to medicine, to the public. Medicine is practicing in a non-scientific way, and it is jeopardizing the health care of the most common health condition in the U.S. That will prompt something to be done.
Wow, that's fantastic. Act now. I love that. Act now. That is some very practical ways that people, the public, can really try to make a difference.
That's right.
So often we think, well, I don't know what I could do. It's not going to make much of a difference. But you had just laid it out there. And if enough people go and enough people act now and follow through with what you just said, that can make a real difference.
It can. No, and that's what has to happen, is there has to be a constituency above medicine, outside of medicine, that insists on change. I'm sorry to say, but I just don't think medicine is going to change on its own. Or if it does, it's going to be another 100, 200 years. I mean, it may slowly evolve into this, but we can't wait. This is people are dying in droves for lack of mental health care. People are whose depression or drug abuse or anxiety is not recognized. People have unnecessary divorces, unnecessary job loss, school failure, addiction, homelessness, incarceration. Our jails and our streets are filled with people with mental disorders that simply, I'm not saying all this can be cured, but if doctors are trained, these people all come to the doctor, if they're trained to recognizing, you can prevent a significant amount of this.
Absolutely. I just fantastic. I feel like you and I can be talking about this for a long, long time, but I just really appreciate you coming on and sharing your expertise, your experience, your passion. Definitely has come out. You want to make physicians aware, young future physicians aware of the need for learning about mental health care. And you want to encourage the public to be able to inspire and help get something started and changed from a really grassroots level.
That's right. That's where it's going to come from, John.
That's right. That's where it has to happen.
It has to.
I agree.
I mean, the women's movement civil rights movement. That's where all this comes. We got out of the Vietnam War. That's where it came from. The public has to be informed, agitated, and act.
That's right. That's right. And you are just exploding that in getting people to take some action. So that's fantastic. Well, Dr. Smith, I don't want to take up all of your time today, but it's been a real pleasure getting to know you and hearing your heart and your desire and passion. I just really applaud you. Thank you for leading the charge here. So important. And I know my listeners really appreciated this as well. And I think you've maybe encouraged a lot of physicians that are listening to this as well to really think through how they interact with their patients.
Yeah. John, thank you. It's a privilege to be here. And thank you also for the work you do. You're helping to air this very problem, not only in this podcast, but in many of them that you do. Mental health has to come to the surface of people's minds in the public.
Absolutely. And that's why I do it. And I love it. And I appreciate that. And I want to thank all of you for listening to this podcast and want you to really think through what we talked about today. And if you're struggling and you go to your doctor, I don't want you to feel like you can't bring this up. Bring it up. But you got to talk about it. Now, your doctor may not know really what to say, but it's still important to bring it up and have that conversation. Maybe their doctor will be able to know what to say and help you take the next steps. So thank you for listening, and I appreciate you. And until next time, take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.